The following program is rated TV-MAL. It contains strong language and is intended only for mature audiences.
TBS, America's number one independent television network, presents the following sports exclusive.
You're listening to Basically a Sports Show.
Follow us on Twitter at Basically Sports.
Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.
And check out every episode of the show at basicallysports.tumblr.com.
Now here's your hosts, Zach,
Greg,
Mike,
and this is Andy, and you're listening to Basically a Sports Show.
You know, every time I listen to that open, the first thing I think of is I am shitty at doing voiceovers. I'm terrible at it. Just terrible.
All right.
I'm just awful.
Well, guys, I don't mean to grab the bull by the horns here, but we do have something in the way of breaking news.
Uh-oh.
Breaking news?
The Jacksonville Jaguars are cryptically tweeting out messages, you know, on the Twitters, as you do, but people have been taking the first letter of every tweet and spelling out, like, teal is the primary.
Really?
Yes. So, well, that'd either,
be a nice change.
Either the Jacksonville Jaguars are making teal their primary and going about it in the most cryptic way possible.
Oh, okay.
Or people are really, really seeing crap that's not there.
Well, some Twitter accounts have done on this. I remember the Carolina Panthers doing something like this to, like, announce a re-signing or something like that. So it's not beyond a team's Twitter account to dive into those depths, as you were.
Is teal the alternate?
I think
right
it's kind of corny. Like,
Is teal the alternate right now, and they would just switch, basically?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good for them.
I mean, it's February 15th. There's nothing – like the league year doesn't start for another month. Then the draft isn't for another, like, what, 2.5 months?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't think we're like, you know, we're going too far of a reach to say that they're tweeting uniform-related news. It's the time.
But why not just go, hey, guys, we're making teal the primary. Why are they doing this, like – Rain Man, you know, A Beautiful Mind style bullshit.
What else are they supposed to do? There's literally nothing else going on.
And they're the Jaguars.
I don't know. They could fawn over some Trevor Lawrence.
No, they can't do that yet. There's all this legal shit. Who knows? You don't want to sit there and, like, Photoshop him into a Jags jersey and then, like, 3 days before the draft, he gets accused of, like, sexual assault or something, and then it's like,
The Rams can't even talk about Matthew Stafford yet. Like, they did a couple of things where, like, they would – yeah, because it can't officially go through until the league year starts. So right. Like, the only things they've done is, like, they tweeted at Clayton Kershaw, and they're like, hey, do you know any places to stay in L.A., Clayton? It's like – or do you know anybody that wants to move to L.A.? Because
they
went to high school together and the whole thing.
Oh, did they?
Huh?
Oh, Stafford and Kershaw went to high school together?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they were like childhood best friends.
That's
the only thing they'd be able to
basically, Matthew Stafford is going to crash on his couch, essentially, is what I'm
– probably a pretty nice couch.
Matthew Stafford can afford something on his own.
His contract should get him at least a couple months' rent somewhere.
Or a mansion in Malibu. I was telling you guys before we started that my brother came up from Key West on Saturday to visit. And we were hanging out, and we were driving through downtown Brooksville, Florida, which is where I'm at this winter. And he goes, hey, do you know what that is? I said, no. He goes, that's the hanging tree. I thought he was making a joke. I'm like, ha, 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 that's funny, blah, blah, blah. Okay, fine. It's in front of the courthouse here. And then upon further inspection, I noticed there's a Confederate statue.
Oh, no.
30
feet from the hanging tree.
Oh, no.
So I go, all right, just statue, yeah, all right, whatever. You know, we're basically in South Georgia. I get it. And then I said, I'm going to look up. I don't think this hanging tree thing is real. Sure as shit, they have a tree in front of this courthouse that used to be used to – now, to be fair, sort of, they lynched – they weren't discriminatory in their practice. They lynched whoever the fuck they wanted to from this tree, but I think the majority of them were black people. And I was just astonished by this. I mean, maybe I'm just too northern. I don't know.
Well, here you go, Greg. Brooksville, previously Pierceville, took on its present name in 1856 to honor and show support for Preston Brooks, a pro-slavery congressman from South Carolina,
okay,
who caned and seriously injured Massachusetts Senator and abolitionist Charles Sumner.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. So
there you go.
But so I see the statue, right? And I think I'm going to take a closer look at this thing. I walk up to it. It's got CSA right at the top, right underneath where this, sure, you know, General fucking Cornpone or whatever his name is standing. And then below that is the rebel flag, the Confederate flag that we're all familiar with. And I'm like, I can't believe this. There's a hanging tree that they straight up legitimately lynched black people on next to a Confederate statue in 2021.
Yep.
I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
It is in Tampa, at least, there was a Confederate statue in front of the Hillsborough County Courthouse.
Oh, my God.
But they took it down. But what's funny is that they took a statue down, but like the podium it was on, they kept. And so now there's a podium that says War Memorial on it without a statue. And
I mean, the argument, and this is what kills me too, the argument against removing the tree, I get it. It's not the tree's fault. The tree didn't do anything wrong. It was just happened to grow up there. So fine, leave the tree up. It's like 200 years old. I understand, you know, maybe you don't want to cut it down, but at least stop referring to it as the hanging tree. But with the statue, I just, for the life of me, and I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole, but I will, for the life of me, never understand the argument that if we take this stuff down, we'll forget our history.
Yeah. As I scroll further down into the Wikipedia article on Brooksville, there's a subsection under history called slavery, lynchings, and discrimination.
Yeah.
So it's obviously notable. So here's a not so proud fact for the great state of Florida. I believe, and I would need to double check, you know, the statistics on this, but I believe that Florida actually led the country on a per capita basis when it came to the lynching of black people.
It was their, like, chief export in Florida.
Like, I mean,
league leaders.
like not in terms of raw numbers, but in terms of, like, on a per capita basis, Florida. Good job, Florida. You make us all so proud.
Well, and then I promise we can move on from this after I just throw this one last bit of information in here. So I'm looking up this stuff, and I find an article in the Tampa Bay Times from 2013. Mm. It says Hernando's, like, troubled, you know, march towards justice, blah, blah, blah. Well, it turns out that the courthouse in 2013 was celebrating its 100th anniversary. It's a really nice big brick courthouse. It's really cool looking, other than the hanging tree and the Confederate statue in front of it. But, you know, that aside, nice building. Come to find out that the reason they had to rebuild it was because it got burnt down in 1877 because there was an interracial marriage, and the people, first off, this mob, killed the black guy that married the white woman, killed the county commissioner who performed the ceremony, and then burnt down the fucking courthouse over it. And I'm just sitting here with my jaws on the floor. I'm like, wow. Because I don't know what to say about it, but I thought you guys might find that interesting.
That is, yeah. It's like
on a positive note,
a black guy married a white woman, and y'all took it that poorly, huh?
A little bit. You could have cut his feet off. You've never done it again. Go ahead, Zach.
Round out our positive Brooksville facts. Mm. For you three, not for me. I don't care. It's the birthplace of Bray Wyatt and Bo Dallas of WWE.
Oh, well, there you go. That's almost a redeeming quality, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, people mate in Florida as they do, and
one of them happened to be Mike Rotunda. So
yeah, and I mean, to be fair, to look at him in character now, he definitely would be a Florida person. You know, he's kind of like a insane clown posse looking person.
I mean, at this point, Bray Wyatt should just
be Florida man.
And just be Florida man. Like the WWE.
Not change anything about his character. He just changed the name Florida man.
He's just Florida man, yeah.
But yeah, so, and the thing, I guess, to wrap it up is that it's a nice town, and it seems very progressive. I mean, there's, you know, there's a very diverse mix of people here and all that. And it just strikes me as so completely out of place that they have a hanging tree and a Confederate statue, because it doesn't really fit the town that well at all.
While you're there, Greg, you should start a petition to replace the Confederate statue with a, you know, Mike Rotunda statue or something.
I think we should replace it with Bray Wyatt myself.
There you go, Bray Wyatt.
Vote, yeah.
Is he holding the lantern shaped like a head?
Fuck yeah.
So back in ancient, like Rome and Greece, I think Rome. So Rome essentially would go around and co-opt all these like pagan religions and stuff. And please, Mike, jump in and correct me if I'm wrong. But essentially, the idea of taking over these groups of people, especially if they were into idolatry and stuff like that, was they would take their special dates, their gods, and all this stuff, and then rebrand them as, you know, like, oh, this isn't Zeus, it's God. They look the same, but this is actually God. Yeah,
it was something called syncretism, where what they would do is, like, for example, the Romans, right? They'd come up and they would conquer some of the Germanic tribes, right? And they'd go, hey, you know, you worship this guy named Thor. He's kind of like Jupiter, so let's just, like,
just
call him Jupiter now. Right. And, you know, it was kind of a way to, like, ease people into the empire so they didn't like revolt, because it's like, you're not like getting rid of their traditions, you're just kind of like merging them into yours,
right?
Yeah.
So it's like a crossfade kind of thing, and I think
it's reverse retro,
and that's what needs to happen in Florida. Is you need to say, they'll be like Robert E. Lee and the Confederate South and Trump, and you'll be like, well how about we meet you in the middle and we have Bray Wyatt. You know, we put a Bray Wyatt statue up, we'll take down the Confederate one, it'll put up a Bray Wyatt, and they'll be like, well, fine. That, yeah. Okay. You know, just that kind of stuff, to where you just slowly ease them, meet them in the middle.
I'm not pleased, but I can't be too upset.
Right.
All right. We'll take down General Cornpone and put up the Rascal.
So I need to ask, is he wearing the elaborate hat, and does he have like a saber?
Yes.
I've never seen the statue before, and I just
I mean, I haven't seen it that closely, but I know he's got the hat for sure.
That's amazing. Like,
I have to look and see, because I'm getting my good camera, and I'm taking pictures of this shit before I go home. But it just seems so completely counterintuitive to everything. It was just like, whoa, because I thought my brother was just joking with the hanging tree thing. I thought he was just like trying to be funny. No. He was dead serious. It's called the hanging tree, and there's petitions all over the place to get rid of it. But like I said, you can't blame the tree. It's not the tree's fault. The statue you can blame. You can go, you can get rid of the statue. But the tree, what are you supposed to do? You know?
I don't know. You can call that one Tide fan. He'll take care of the tree.
That's true. Kidding me? No, he wouldn't.
No, you just lie to him, right? You just tell him it's another Auburn tree, right?
That's an Auburn tree, bro.
And he'll take care of it, right?
Roll damn Tide. Anyway. Yeah.
I thought that guy was dead. I thought he died recently.
I think he did a couple years ago.
I'm sure he's got people to carry on his mission. Of
how great would it have been if he had been poisoned?
By an Auburn fan.
It would have been cooler.
Like, you don't want to get in between those fans in Alabama, all right?
I'm thinking like an accidental poisoning would have just been just the universe's bizarre sense of justice, I think.
Well, I'm sure it was the Ents that actually killed him, that, you know, they heard he was poisoning trees. They did an Ent moot and got together, and they killed him, as Ents do.
That tree looked kind of like Bob. Yeah, I think it does.
No, it's he mistook antifreeze for Gatorade and accidentally poisoned himself. That would be hilarious to me.
Also possible.
But yeah. So anyway, that was my story for the day.
Dennis wants a statue like the South Park flag.
I'm not familiar with it.
It's in our Discord. So basically it's the previous flag used to be. I'll just share the screen here. I can't remember what episode it's from, but it is in
it was basically a takeoff on the whole like Confederate flag argument that was, you know, going on at the time. And still is going on because, you know.
So this one on the left
the
is
the old one.
Yeah, that's the old one, white people hanging a black guy. And on the left, it's a multi-ethnic group of people hanging a black guy.
And there's even one of the guys doing the hanging is black, so it's really not racist.
Everything's just fine.
Yeah.
So I mean, we kind of talked about before the show started. I mean, we're in that kind of lull where there's just really nothing going on. There's hockey. There's some basketball stuff. They're in the midst of their seasons, and we did have a. I don't know if it was suicide. I can't find anything that says it was suicide. But Vincent Jackson died. He was 38. What did they find
in
a hotel?
In Brandon.
Florida?
Brandon, Florida, yeah.
Yeah, I know where that is.
Yeah, I know I know exactly where he was found dead.
He last retired as a Buck, right?
He did, yeah.
That's true, yeah.
But yeah, he's another NFL guy. It's sort of becoming like the pro wrestler thing, where a lot of these guys just die real young or before.
It's almost like head trauma is a serious concern.
I was just going to say, you got to wonder if it is suicide, if that played a role. You just don't know.
You know, at this point, it's almost like it's suicide until proven otherwise. You know, when do you see this, when do you see stuff like this?
Well, the thing I heard was that the police were like looking into it, but they hadn't conclusively said it's one thing or another. But yeah, like, dude is found dead, you know, in his hotel room alone without any sign of, you know, struggle.
Yeah,
you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll confirm or they'll put some, the family will put something out.
He's just dead. Was there like a gunshot or
no details?
No details. It could be anything between what we're talking about. It could be drug overdose. You know, any number of things that you'd be found dead in a hotel room for.
Hopefully, it's not a David Carradine situation, and
or Michael Hutchins.
Yeah,
everyone should hope that it's not a David Carradine situation. That's the most ignominious way to go.
I mean, sure. David Carradine, great actor, and now when you say his name, you know,
great is a bit of a stretch. But he was an actor.
Great in a schlocky sort of way. Like
he was good in Kill Bill.
That was literally the only movie I can remember.
If you like 70s, 80s schlock, David Carradine's your man.
Death Race 2000.
Yeah,
wasn't
exactly.
He,
that kind of shit.
Wasn't he in Kung Fu? Wasn't that what he was known for?
Yeah.
Kung Fu?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think because I think that's what got him. So, I mean, I follow a YouTube channel, Red Letter Media, they watch just tons of just bad movies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
David Carradine's in a lot of them, and he's always drunk in them.
He's always drunk, and he's always like in the same vague costume, which just makes you kind of wonder that, you know, these cheap schlock productions hire him and he just shows up and he doesn't even bother with like makeup.
Well, it's like they got him for like a day, you know?
So the Wikipedia page, as we know, the best source on the internet.
Right.
Perhaps best known as the star of the 1970s television series Kung Fu, where he played a peace-loving Shaolin monk traveling through the American Old West.
I loved that show when I was a kid, but you got to remember I was 10.
Yeah.
So it might not hold up is what you're saying.
And then also Bill of Kill Bill fame. And then he was in two Martin Scorsese films, Boxcar Bertha and Mean Streets.
Not a single mention of Death Race 2000?
No. He received three additional Golden Globe nominations for Bound for Glory, 1976, a television miniseries, North and South.
Oh, yeah, I saw that, too, when I was in my younger
speaking
years.
Of the Civil War, there you go.
Right, there you go. See, we always tie it up in the end, folks. Always.
David Carradine had, like, a vague, like, I could buy him as, like, a Civil War colonel look to him.
He was a plantation owner who was just – if you sat down and wrote the most cheesy 80s version of a Civil War era plantation owner, it would have been this character. Maybe it wasn't a caricature. Maybe they were exactly like that. I don't know, but it was really.
I just saw a picture of him as the Shaolin monk.
Yeah. Wow. Well, you watched it for 30 minutes to wait for him to kick somebody's ass at the end. That was what the point of the show was.
So the Carradines are actually a long, a tenured acting family dating back to like the 1800s, like the mid to late 1800s.
Yeah. That's amazing that like his ancestor is probably some like classically trained Shakespearean actor, and now David Carradine is in Death Race 2000 drunk.
his dad was a big name actor.
John Carradine, I think.
Yeah, and his brother. I was his brother or cousin or something. Keith Carradine is actually
his half brother, and Keith Carradine's badass. He's in a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
Other thing that people of our generation, Mike, Andy, that would know the series Kung Fu for, is bringing the term grasshopper.
Is that where that came from?
Sure is.
Yeah.
Okay, so now I know that my dad was a big Kung Fu fan.
Well,
young grasshopper.
Well, that's the thing is, you may know that turn of phrase, but you don't have to have seen Kung Fu.
Right.
It kind of became bigger than the show. It's kind of like wax on, wax off, or something like that, to where it just.
What's
kind of,
in the Star Wars prequels? What was it that he
referred to?
Padawan. Yeah, it was basically the Padawan of its day. So more or less, yeah.
Sure.
But yeah, so Keith Carradine's good stuff. Go ahead.
I remember just calling. You know, you're on the playground. It was. Grasshopper, and then I think I think you're right that as soon as we got episode one, I think it's we changed Padawan. All the Padawan. Yeah.
One of the
Which
few
is a real dumb word, but
it's one of those dumb words. It's one of those George Lucas things where it's like, George, couldn't you have just used like apprentice? Like,
well, grasshopper. Why? Let's go all in on this grasshopper. Make it universal, literally.
I don't know. There are some times when it comes to George Lucas, especially George Lucas directed like Star Wars, where I get it. You want to make it seem alien, but like there's a limit. I felt the same way about younglings. Like,
yeah,
just say kids or children.
Right. But it's like it's a galaxy far, far away.
They all speak English, but they can't say kids. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that might have been
Greg. Basic,
that might have been English. I feel like that could have been a way to circumvent some sort of censor because
you don't want to say Anakin slaughtering children,
right? Because I think because they needed because I'm sure it was the Revenge of the Sith was the first PG-13 Star Wars. PG-13, I think it was. Yep. It's one of only a few now. So I think there's been a couple since.
I think all of the sequels are PG-13, but I don't know.
I don't know. Anyway,
I know Force Awakens and Last Jedi definitely are. But yeah. Anyway,
but either way, so that might have been a measure to like Ewan McGregor is going to get out there and he's going to say he killed the children and
yeah,
George
was like, I saw
I saw footage of Anakin killing children is different than I saw a hologram of Anakin slaughtering younglings. That's very different.
Just really, really takes the oomph out of that particular scene because he just kind of laughs.
I mean, I don't know. There's no ambiguity considering we see him angrily give an angry death stare to a child before igniting a lightsaber.
That's nothing but a tease. It shows you nothing. Like if you wanted to really like, you should have had him. He's totally got to just run a kid through with a lightsaber. Because, he's fucking evil. He's supposed to, you want to really sell it. You don't need to show. Yeah. And plus, lightsaber stabbings are never that violent anyway unless you sever a limb.
Yeah. I mean, what is it? Within, the next 10 minutes, he goes and slaughters the entire Separatists.
Yeah, but they're all CGI cartoons, so, nobody cares.
There's prosthetics in there. Newt Gunray is a real person.
And that's the other thing, too, at the end of Revenge of the Sith. Why the hell? I don't care. Like, they show them going to these planets, all the Wookiees and shit, and they're just slaughtering Wookiees. And I'm like, I don't know any of these Wookiees. I don't give a shit about these Wookiees.
The only Wookiee I give a shit about is Chewbacca.
Right.
He's there. Fuck the rest of the Wookiees. Who cares?
You see one. You see Chewie. You talk to him.
Yeah.
One of the things that I really hate about that movie.
Yeah, you see, that's one of those things where it's like, I see Chewie, but he conversely, probably shouldn't be there.
Well, I think my least favorite line in the entire prequels, besides the ones that everyone makes fun of, is goodbye Chewbacca. Yoda saying goodbye Chewbacca, my old friend. Bitch, no.
Yeah, don't.
No.
You guys aren't old friends.
Speaking of
Chewie is just Han's co-pilot. He's not the general of general of the Wookiee army.
Go ahead, Mike.
The only thing to kind of go back to Red Letter Media, they did have a good point, which was that thank God George Lucas showed enough restraint to not have little kid Han Solo in Revenge of the Sith.
They almost did.
I was going to say,
you know, that was on a whiteboard somewhere.
Yeah, you know it.
Absolutely. He wanted to, and they just didn't find a way to get it in there. But he wanted to do it.
Oh no!
Hell, the Millennium Falcon's in one of those movies, like taking off from a platform.
Yeah.
But it's well before Han would have owned it because he would have been a child, of course. But still,
stupid.
It's there. Anyway.
What's that thing like? What was it, like the 57 Chevy of the Star Wars universe? Because it has to be pretty old at that point. I mean, if it was in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, I mean, we know it was nice and pristine when Lando had it.
Right. Then, Lando got a brand new one and, polished it with his capes.
And then Han trashed it.
Well, yeah, he had to make the Kessel run.
He had to make the Kessel.
Well, are we sure it was Han? Maybe it was Chewie. He doesn't seem like he would really give
a shit
about.
We saw it in the movie.
Yeah, in Solo. We see how it gets trashed.
Oh, that's
very nice. And then Han gets behind the wheel, and they land on the next planet, and it's already torn to shit.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's where there's a great line from that movie. I hate you. I know.
Yeah.
Aha. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Underrated film.
Yeah, it was all right. I left the theater pleased, but not like I wasn't like blown away. It was like, you know, I saw that movie and it didn't offend me. So,
and then right. Darth Maul showed up with
which made sense to only the people that had seen the cartoons, which means that I had to explain to my entire group of friends. We all got outside and they're like, Darth Maul, and I was like, let's have a seat and talk to you about robotic spider legs. And eventually we got to how that happened.
Oh, boy.
Oh. Well, see, Clone Wars, everybody.
It's real fun.
We started with Vincent Jackson. Now we're on Star Wars. So.
Natural segue, yeah.
But, it never takes us long to get to Star Wars. We can find a way to get there pretty much from anywhere.
See that looks like I was reading this thing about the Broncos and Drew Lock apparently are on the outs. Another quarterback situation that's deteriorating quickly.
Oh, no.
They had to dummy down the playbook for him, apparently.
Who's this?
Drew Lock in Denver.
Ooh, Drew Lock?
I'm getting
COVID QB.
I was reading about how Mac Jones, who's probably projected to go in the bottom third of the draft in a normal year, and is for whatever reason now probably going to go in the top five, top 10, if not top five, all because hashtag quarterback panic. Because like everybody in this fucking league right now, especially this year, is just shuffling quarterbacks. More than I can ever remember.
A third of the league. Yeah.
When was the last Alabama quarterback that was really good?
Tua.
Well, the jury's still out on him.
You mean like that in the league? In the
NFL? I think Joe Namath, probably. Jim and he wasn't Plunkett? That good. Who?
Or not Jim Plunkett. Who am I thinking about? There was a Raiders QB that was an Alabama guy.
Oh, Ken right? Stabler.
Ken Stabler. That's what I'm thinking of.
Okay, that was like 76. I'm just saying. I mean, maybe Mac Jones will be the next whoever. Baker Mayfield. I didn't want to say Joe Montana because I didn't want to get that whole thing started. The next Baker Mayfield. But really, Alabama doesn't have a history of like these quarterbacks. There was a guy that played for the Jets.
We've talked about it.
Hmm? AJ McCarron,
AJ McCarron, Greg McElroy,
Brody Croyle. I'm just kind of going through, probably on the same list I am.
Parker Wilson, yeah.
Mike Shula, I guess he was a quarterback in Alabama. I guess he's a head coach.
Did he get drafted in the NFL, Mike Shula?
No, I guess he was his coach. So I'm
when we're talking about Alabama QBs in the NFL, you're thinking Joe Namath, Ken Stabler, and Bart Starr, and that's really the list.
Richard Todd was the guy that started for the Jets for about 5 years back in the late 70s, early 80s, and he was serviceable. Would be the best way I could describe him. Wasn't great, wasn't terrible. Just held the job for a few years.
And here's the problem that we're going to have now with some of these quarterbacks. So like Jalen Hurts. Technically an Alabama QB, but ultimately, you know, graduated from Oklahoma. Same thing with Joe Burrow at, you know, with the Bengals. Yes, he graduated and won a national title at LSU, but he also played at Georgia and was on the Ohio State roster as a freshman, right?
Before he was on all three. So I thought it was just Ohio State and LSU. I didn't know that Georgia was in there too.
I believe Georgia was in there too.
Wow.
So yeah, with the way that I mean, it's you see it in the high school ranks already with these kids just kind of going wherever they can play. Quarterback lineage in terms of their school doesn't mean the same as it did, even just 10 years ago. And again, we bring up Alabama and it's like they're a football factory. They produce linemen like hell. They produce secondary. Defensive secondary like hell, running backs, pretty good running backs over the
all the best players, all the best players from hell.
But
yeah, the whole thing with again the quarterback situation stuff is one of those moments where I feel like I'm trying to find the right comparison. It feels like the NBA kind of where you like associate a player forever with one franchise, then you find out they played for like four. It's like seeing clips of Shaq in a Cavs uniform. It's like, what the hell happened? How did this happen?
The Shaq one that always throws me is Boston. I always forget that he played for Boston.
Wow, he did, didn't he?
Boston, Phoenix.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, there's a great Phoenix photo where somebody's taken all of his jerseys across the years, it makes a complete rainbow from red with the Heat, purple with the Lakers or Suns, orange with the Suns, yellow with the Lakers, green with the
Celtics.
Celtics, blue with the Cavs, gold with the Cavs, red with the Cavs.
But yeah, the I don't know, like this whole like quarterback panic thing is so monumentally stupid. I've stopped caring because like they say stuff like you know, Carson Wentz is could be traded at any moment now, and then it doesn't happen. We've got the ongoing, you know, Deshaun Watson situation. At a certain point, you know, people are saying like, oh, Russell Wilson, you know, might be, you know, on the market. At a certain point, it comes down to like, just call me when something happens because and I understand that like a lot of these teams, like obviously, you know, if you're the Eagles and you have Carson Wentz, you want to get as much for him as possible. But like at the same time, either like make a deal or don't stop wasting my time.
Well, this kind of go ahead.
No, Isaiah, this kind of segues into Houston Texans gate and all this bullshit happening.
Fuck you, Texans.
But the Watson thing is interesting because he clearly wants to get the hell out of there. JJ Watt's gone. I mean, he's kind of old, so I mean, who knows? He may end up
Pittsburgh
like not
for him.
Probably. I mean, he's going to get paid too much simply because of his like what he's done in the, like 4 or 5 years ago. He hasn't been the same since he's been getting hurt. But like, you know, they've said for the record that they want, not for the record, but they said they want what, 3 firsts or something and 2 defensive starters, some of that effect.
Yeah, for Watson.
And it's like, and then the Eagles come out for Wentz and they're like, we want, you know, at least 2 firsts and play one else crap.
Oh,
and it's
bullshit.
Like, what? Well, that's the thing is that like, you know, they've created this artificial market hoping that the panic will net somebody to overpay, and nobody's overpaying, so they just look like idiots that are bad at doing deals.
Yeah, so now it's like either lower your asking price or none of these guys are going to move and you're going to be stuck with untenable situations. So,
well, I mean, between – because we have Watson available. We have Carson Wentz available.
Russell Wilson, maybe?
Right, Russell Wilson, question mark. Drew Lock up in the air. You know, the Colts need a QB, and Washington wants a QB. And
I've heard Garoppolo might be like I've heard Garoppolo might be on the market, and that apparently Kyle Shanahan wants Kirk Cousins.
Gardner.
Just weird.
Gardner Minshew will probably be on a new team next year. I mean, not that he's a big name or anything, but like, you know, they'll be
Gardner Minshew being on seemed like the perfect Jags quarterback. It's going to be weird. Like, I don't know. Like, he just seemed like the perfect quarterback for a team in North Florida.
Yeah. He was a flash in the pan that we will never get back.
I hope he goes to the Bears. I hope he's a Bear next year. That'd be awesome. I'd be totally down for Gardner Minshew.
We talked about this after we went off the air last week. How would you feel if the Bears got Russell Wilson?
It would probably.
Would you be first in line at the children's hospital to congratulate them?
I'd be depressed that they probably would have to give up the world to get him. And I mean, I can look past all the terrible this falseness. You know, I can get past that if you're good.
As soon as he ends his press conference with "Go Bears," you'll be behind him.
I mean, I don't know, but behind him, I'll just kind of be like, all right, just whatever, just win. You know, I just win, but. I don't know. I don't know. I'm very much a candidate for the way of thinking to where it's like, yeah, I'm a fan of the team. That doesn't mean I like the players or I like the team. You know, I feel like it's totally fair to be like, yeah, you know, like when the Cubs, for example, had not Alfonseca, what's his name, the closer who beat on the women.
Chapman.
Yeah, I hated that piece of shit. And I was really unhappy that they got him. They also did the same thing with Jim Edmonds. I hated that fucker. He's one of my most hated players of all time, Jim Edmonds. And when he came to the Cubs, it's like, God damn it. I didn't want this piece of shit in a fucking Cubs jersey. But hey, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, you're on the right side, I guess, this time. But, you know,
Edmonds come to the Cubs from the Cardinals?
Yeah. Well, he was a free agent. He was pretty old.
Do we want to talk about how the Cardinals fleeced the Rockies?
I don't know what the hell's going on in Colorado, man. That's stupid-ass franchise.
That's a mess. That's a real mess.
Yeah.
Okay, so who's a bigger mess? Colorado, the Colorado Rockies, or the Houston Texans?
The Houston Texans by a long shot. I don't. it's not even a question right now.
Like, because I wanted to talk about this when we were talking about J.J. Watt, and you know, Andy, you're right. He is, you know, he's old. He's up there in age. He's not the player he used to be. But, you know, still, if you're a Texans fan, how demoralizing does that have to be that the guy who basically is your team, the guy who is the face of your team, you know, who's done so much for your community, is just like, I've got to get out of here. That's got to be a kick in the balls.
Yeah. I mean, Houston is much more of a shit show right now just because of how quickly things have decayed.
Well, I mean, by all accounts, the Colorado Rockies are merely a poorly run baseball team, whereas the Houston Texans are under the thrall of a Rams 80 called Rasputin, which I thought was a pretty good...
That's perfect, actually.
A pretty good term.
That is very much appropriate for what he kind of is doing. But the Texans, you know, like we've discussed, they had kind of a run of success. They're in an established football market. The city is clearly like willing to show up and support the team no matter what. And within a matter of, you know, 9 months, they're gutting things or they're self-imploding because the team is run by a like youth pastor. And it's just fucking everything up.
It is fascinating on some level to see one man with no qualifications just completely bend a multi-billion-dollar business to his whim.
Who was the guy? Who was it that he just hired? Oh, it was the character coach.
Yeah.
Which was another religious guy, I guess.
Yeah. Like, basically, from what I understand, Easterby is basically purging the team of everyone who's not basically loyal to him.
How very Christian of him.
Yeah, which is why you've got cases like, you know, you've got people who have been with the team forever, like their PR manager and their team president who are just leaving.
Yeah, like the beloved equipment manager who's been there for like 13 years.
Yeah, who's been there since like day one got canned.
Yeah.
The real question is when they rebrand as the Houston Bible guns, are they going to emphasize the gun or the Bible on the helmet, do you think?
It will be a Bible with a gun on it. Like emblazoned.
Let's not besmirch the good name of President Bible Gun.
President Bible Gun.
President Bible Gun, while he does endorse a Christian Houston Texans, I do feel
he still wants to see a winning Houston Texans.
Correct, yes.
You know, he wants a good team, you know.
Right.
No, I made the joke last week that they were trying to be the Liberty University of the NFL, and sometimes it seems like that's actually what they're trying to do.
I mean, the rebranding to President Bible Gun, I was actually thinking they might try to get some synergy going and just rebrand along the lines of the Christian totalitarian state from The Handmaid's Tale. Like just
What was it called?
Gilead.
The Gilead, yeah, the Houston Gileads. There you go.
Houston Gileads, like they go to Hulu, right? And they're like, hey, you know, let's do some and Hulu's kind of like, they're like the bad guys. No.
Not in our eyes, they're not.
There's a lot of people from – I was just kind of reading up a few articles about people in Houston, beat writers in Houston and stuff who are like talking about like the league is going to eventually intervene. And – I was baffled at that because, like, I feel like I've heard Bears fans say that for years. Like, the league needs to intervene and force the McCaskies to sell the team. And with Houston, it's almost like, yeah, well, that's not necessarily – Easterby is not an owner. He's essentially been giving the blessing of running the team without – it's very informal. I just don't – you know, the league – there's no precedent for this. Is there the league stepping in to
NFL.
In the NBA, there was a Ted Stepien rule, but that was with the Cavs. But that's the only time I've ever seen that. I think that every league has a – like a stipulation in their charter that we can step in for the good of the league.
Yeah, I don't know if it's ever happened. As a Laker fan, I'll always remember Chris Paul not going to Lakers because basketball reasons, whatever the fuck that meant.
At the end of the day, when it comes to this situation, like good
Arizona
of the league,
Coyotes.
Good of the league is a situation, is a term that is like very broad. Like, is the NFL like, okay, say, you know, apparently by all accounts, you know, Cal McNair, who owns the Texans, is just completely enthralled by this Easterby fellow. Let's like just say hypothetically that Cal McNair doesn't fire him. He continues to let him do whatever the fuck he wants. Right, like the NFL, is the NFL going to care if revenue is still coming in? Is the NFL no. even if they become the laughing stock of the league, even if every single like hackneyed comedian is like dunking on them at their expense, like if the money's coming in, is the league going to care?
No. Well, they're not going to care if they're just a losing franchise. That's you know, whatever. We've had plenty of those. But I think it's a matter of like a culture thing where like if players don't want to go to your team, not because you're bad, but because you have a bad culture, like I think we're almost going to get to that point with the Redskins Washington, the 32s before
the fighting W's
before, you know, they went ahead and or at least putting on the face that they're trying to fix things. But that's even just like that's like a workplace culture. It's not like a what this is with Houston is like this weird. It's happened so quickly, too, where like. Yes, Bill O'Brien was driving the team down, but as soon as he left, like,
and McNair died,
then the wheels have completely come off, and there's like nobody. There was no warden to run the asylum, and so one of the inmates took control.
By all accounts, Bill O'Brien was a symptom of this, then, and not the cause. I'm basing this all off what was in the SI piece, but. From what I've read, it seems as if, like, say, right, the Hopkins trade, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, you know, everyone, you know, dumped on Bill O'Brien for it because he was the GM at the time. But, like, apparently that was something that Easterby was pushing. It's like he didn't want him around because he was, like, not really buying into Easterby's, like, bullshit cult, essentially. And so, like, and then, like, apparently it's been reported that right before the game that was Bill O'Brien's last game as head coach, Easterby was going around like the team offices going like telling people it's like, hey, there's going to be a coaching change coming up. And then, you know, they lost that game and Bill O'Brien got axed. And so it seems kind of as if like not to defend Bill O'Brien because he was an absolute idiot who bungled his way into that franchise and bungled away a sure thing over, you know, the team that eventually became the Super Bowl champions that year. But like, it seems more and more that like a lot of the really egregious stuff that you could pin on Bill O'Brien, you know, might not have just been him. And then that Easterby kind of canned him as soon as he stopped being useful to him.
Who was coaching before Bill O'Brien, that team?
Kubiak, wasn't it?
Yeah, yes, for a while. Kubiak, right? Yeah. Was that when they were good, Zach? Was Kubiak?
I think so. That sounds right.
Okay.
They made the playoffs with
Matt Schaub and
But like now you even look at it and who's the new head coach for the Houston Texans? It's like somewhat receivers coach. From the Ravens?
Arthur Culley.
Yeah.
He's 65 years old. He's going to relate real well to all those young kids.
65 years old, has never even been a coordinator as far as I'm aware, like much less a head coach.
Well,
So, I mean, he's basically there to place hold things until they feel like McCown is ready to be a coach.
Why do they want Josh McCown to be the coach?
Like, they want Christian.
He's a Bible-y guy.
Because Lovie Smith is the same thing. He's just a real nice fatherly figure, very, very religious, devout man.
There's three things in life: faith, family, and football.
Get Lovie Smith in. At least Lovie Smith's been a head coach before.
Didn't he coach the Bears to the Super Bowl that year? Was that him?
Yeah.
The Bears to the Super Bowl with Rex fucking Grossman.
He was, right? Solid. He had a good Bears career. I mean, and he was good but never great. And then he went to the Bucks, and that was just kind of a shit show. And then he went to the Illini, and that was kind of a shit show. And now he's off to Houston, where it is a shit show. So, I mean, he kind of, you know, has a trend of just going to these programs or whatever that are kind of downcast. But I mean, to be fair, the Houston situation is very unique. It's a, you know,
it's
essentially
one man essentially, you know, taking over from within.
Well, let me ask you guys, we joke about it, but do we really think that Easterby is actually trying to
install some sort of like faith-based initiative,
yes.
essentially?
Yes, honestly,
100%. Yeah, I don't feel like there's any doubt about that. I don't think necessarily that the faith thing is a prerequisite. I think it's more of like, you know, I think there's sort of like, are you a bad person type thing, where it's like, well, you know, are you a mean person? You know, like, did that man just said fuck? We had it on his Snapchat that he said fuck, and well,
it's one of those things where like I hear it. You hear it in college football. I even hear it you hear it in college football. You hear it in high schools. You hear it in things where it's just like, he's a man of faith. You know, he's a real solid stand up guy. And so it's not necessarily like they're not going to put it on the job requirement that you need to be
legally practicing. They
no,
you're right. Exactly. But you like know what, when though? They go about the hiring process, if he's like, oh yes, sir, you know, I go to church every Sunday and here's my favorite Bible verses. They'll be like, oh, this is a man of faith. He's a man of principle. And so that's the kind of guy that they're going to go to bring in.
The problem with that, and you know, I think that is that, if we had a dollar for every man of faith that's done something really fucked up, we'd be doing this show on the beach in Hawaii right
well,
now.
Well, yeah, exactly.
But well, I mean, see, that's like
– it's a cover.
I feel like if I were in that situation, I'd bullshit. I'd say my favorite Bible verse is the one that forbids wearing mixed fabrics. But I just see how they take it.
Yeah, it's a delicate thing because, I mean, I don't feel like it's, you know, I don't want to
there's nothing wrong with people being religious or being devout.
But when you basically when you bend it into this weird cult of personality, which seems to be what they're doing in Houston, like and I think this is where I think tying into what Zach was saying earlier, where the league might intervene, right, is like if this becomes a problem where players are actively telling each other like, hey, don't go to Houston free agency. If they try to trade you to Houston, try to stop it. Like if players are telling each other that, it, like God forbid, or you know, maybe God willing, if the if the players union actually gets involved, right? Because like remember the players union, was it two seasons ago, came out and basically was telling people like, hey, if you go to Jacksonville, like keep in mind they're responsible for like half of our reported grievances. So if the league gets involved, if the players association gets involved and starts telling people like, hey, don't go to Jacksonville, then I think that might be where you see, like, if there's any hope that the league might step in, it's like, it's not that they're bad necessarily, although they will be bad, but it's like, you know, if there's some kind of weird situation going on there that players are actively trying to avoid, then that might, you know, require the league to come in.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, well, and that's not a fast process here. That's going to take probably a couple of years.
That's going to take a couple of years, you know, to, you know, build that reputation, to, you know, get enough complaints into the union, that sort of thing.
If it takes that, I mean, it could be a lot longer than that. Mm-hmm. Honestly, it could take 10 years. Unless somebody goes Donald Sterling, which is always a possibility. But other than that, yeah.
I don't see a Sterling situation.
Have you seen Easterby's stand-up comedy? All right. That dude is not saying a curse word.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't the Lions we're talking about here. I mean,
he could still say something very stupid.
Well,
I mean, he already has. Again, if you've seen his stand-up.
Right, yeah.
I think that...
Mike, he was only one person away from going full-on, like, imitate a black person and that thing. Come on.
Yeah, it was... oh, God.
No, I don't know. I think with Houston, I think it'll happen probably... I think 2 years is a good timeline, but just... You know, man, if I was a Texans fan, I would be so. I mean, it's weird because if you go through their community,
you know what? Become a Cowboys fan.
Well, that's
right?
The thing. I think a lot of them are looking to temporarily join to other fan bases for a while until the situation is figured out, because they need a lifeboat franchise because they don't have theirs anymore.
If you are a Houston Texans fan and you are rightfully feeling distraught about all this, become a Cowboys fan for a few years. All right. I know they're the in-state rivals, but you know what? Jerry Jones is an idiot, but at least he seems to give a shit about winning football games. And
go be a Buccaneers fan. They'll take anybody, right?
I couldn't hear you over, you know, the continuing celebration from this.
Yeah, did they fish the trophy out of the river or?
Okay, that was hilarious. That woman, the daughter of the guy who.
Oh my god!
the daughter, yeah, the daughter of the supposed daughter of the
silversmith
of the trophy,
yeah,
came to social media to be like, they were disrespecting my father's memory, and it's like, relax, shut up, lady. It's well, you not know, the Stanley Cup. They make one of these every year.
It's like, and besides, speaking of the Stanley Cup, do you don't want to know half the shit that the Stanley Cup's been through. Yeah, all right?
The first response I saw to her, one of the stories about her was, you don't even want to know about the Stanley Cup. Or like, thank God it wasn't Lord Stanley's cup. I mean, it was a million of them. It was
every bodily fluid and substance has been in and on the Stanley Cup.
My favorite Stanley Cup story is that it went missing for 2 days and nobody could find it until it randomly turned up in a parking lot.
But, I mean, that's perfect.
My favorite used to be when Mark Messier took it to a strip club, but that's even better. That's awesome.
Yeah, Mark Messier in the strip club or his pool.
Or the time when, you know, this is way, way back, you know, in its early days when it was just the cup. The original Ottawa Senators won it.
This is exactly what I was going to bring up.
Yeah, and one of them was bragging about his football skills, and to prove it, he punted the Stanley Cup into Rideau Canal in Ottawa.
Don't you think, though, that kind of stuff makes the cup even more interesting?
Sure. Yeah.
It's awesome that it has that history.
Like when I saw the video, I was like, holy shit, what, like, it's Tom Brady, so of course he's gonna complete the pass. But it was like, but what if he didn't? What if he just dropped it in the river?
I thought about that too. They had some scuba divers down there.
That's not a river. That's the bay. That's like ocean.
Yeah, that's pretty deep, I think, too.
Right.
So scuba divers, you go find it, big deal. That's what they've done with the cup.
But again, Lombardi trophy. Like, I'm sure they have spares, like, ready to go for next year already.
That's the thing, is that they make a new one each year, and it becomes, as soon as they're done with it, it's property of the NFL, and when it's won, it becomes property of that team.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, shut the hell up. Nobody cares about the opinion of the silversmith that fucking made it, you know. Yeah. Your services were rendered.
What I did care about was drunk ass Tom Brady, who got like one slice of a strawberry and was set sideways.
No, man, he did a shot of tequila.
A little bit of tequila.
That was the funniest thing I heard, though, was that somebody slipped him a strawberry.
Well, yeah. if that was a little bit of tequila.
He didn't have enough glasses of water, sure.
His definition of a little bit of tequila and mine are completely different, because it looked like that little bit to him was like a half a bottle.
It was it was hilarious. The best part about that video is that he's like waving to the fans, and like he tries to walk towards them, and then like the team rep is like guiding him away.
Yeah.
Please.
It's hilarious. It's like he is a magnanimous emperor. I want to be with the people.
You know, he's not a good day drinker, that's for sure.
No. I just don't think he's a drinker at all, you know, and the guy's diet is so...
Well, you know what? I think it's kind of cool that he got hammered. Let's be honest about it.
Why not?
I mean, he got hammered on a boat.
You won. Yeah. Go for it.
It's Florida. He got hammered on a boat. Big deal. That makes him like everyone else down here.
It's one of the best parts of every sports celebration, especially, you know, with hockey, especially the players are just all shit-faced.
I mean, it's like, parade. Again, the Brett Hull speech at the Blue Stanley Cup parade.
We went Blues.
Yeah. And again, you know, in his mind, he thought he'd just crack the code of the universe.
I mean, when you take it step by step, it's not stupid. But when you say it out loud, it's very stupid. Like, you know about this, Andy? What we're talking about?
No, I don't give a shit.
Oh. So when the Blues won the cup, shit-faced Brett Hull went up onto the stage at the celebration and was like, you know, during the game, everybody always says, "Let's go Blues." And we all get into it, right? We all get into it. But we went. So now let's all say together, "We went Blues." Because you see, they don't have to go anywhere because they got there. So they went.
You're right. When you break it down step by step, it makes sense. But
and it's
it out
clear.
Loud.
And when Zach says it shit-faced Brett Hull, it is one of those very obviously shit-faced moments.
Well, how many? I mean, you know, I think that the St. Louis Blues winning the Stanley Cup was one of those signs of the apocalypse things we had that was just never going to happen, and then
well,
it did.
And what, I mean, really, Mike, what hours of the day is Brett Hull not a little shit-faced?
That's good true. Him and Phil Esposito here in Tampa.
God.
Phil Esposito, if you are ever in the Tampa Bay area and there's a Lightning game ongoing, turn on the TV if you want, but make sure the audio is the radio feed. Yeah.
Wow. Look at that.
Phil Esposito as the color guy for the Lightning radio feed.
Oh, he put that puck in the net for sure. Yeah.
Give it to the second period, and Phil's already half in the bag, and it's between drunken Phil Esposito and overly excited Dave Mishkin, who loses his fucking mind at every goal. So
you have him scream, you have the play-by-play guy screaming his head off, and then just like muted in the background, you hear Phil Esposito, "Oh wow, that was nice."
Or when Phil Esposito doesn't know any of like the current players in the league.
There's Steven Stamkos, and he passed it to the other guy who put it in the net.
Or when he's talking about the other team. Well, that's an Ottawa player.
It's like a NHL 2004 commentary or something. Where it's, the man passes it to the guy. Nothing beats this for me is when Corey Crawford, who recently retired, he's shit-faced here, and he just swears like a sailor. It's real quick. He's belligerently drunk.
Fuck your ice, Chicago! Biggest bunch of beauties in the league. Fucking worked their nuts off for this.
That, you could tell, not only is he drunk, That is a drunk Canadian. That's a good old drunk Canadian boy.
Bunch of beauties.
If you want to watch a really good one, watch LeBron's speech at the Cavs championship parade.
What did he do?
Oh my God! I can't remember who they traded for.
Did he admit he was bald?
No, of course not.
Okay,
but they made a trade for some player. I don't remember who it was, but he's like, and I ran into. Our GM at the airport, I said, that motherfucker's big, ain't he? I mean, he was just like dropping F-bombs left and right and just cussing. And it was hilarious, really. But he went on for like 45 minutes. And I mean, it was like as R-rated as anything I'd ever seen.
It's better, like you said,
it's great when these guys that are like buttoned up all year long and doing their media crap and working out at 5 a.m. every morning and drinking, you know, strawberry jam instead of eating anything. They're like true biggest party that they get to have when they get the release and they just drink nothing but champagne and Coors Light for 48 hours. And that
Corey Crawford video is brilliant because not only is he like belligerently drunk, but it's like the Chicago Blackhawks championship belt just kind of adds to it. Like,
yeah, fucking right, Chicago.
We're gonna fucking nuts off. Woo. Like the
Go Hawks.
There's something about, like, I think, what was it, the Eagles, one of their linemen gave a really great, like, almost a wrestling promo, full of profanity, that was really good.
It was Travis Kelce's Nathan Peters, brother.
Was it Peters or something like that? I can't remember what his name was.
I thought it was Travis Kelce's younger brother.
I think you're right. I think it was Kelce's brother, yeah.
Yeah, I forget his first name, but
anyway. But, yeah, so it was
other Kelce. Cool.
But, I don't know, it is nice to see these guys who essentially... I can't imagine just you dedicate, you know, 4 to 10 plus years of your life to winning one of them, which makes Jordan's accomplishments even more astounding. That guy fucking every, you know, summer he was quaffing bourbon and cigars and had to start training camp a couple weeks later. And
I will say for Mike that, the city of Los Angeles has been quite, jealous or envious, or not even envious, but just kind of like giving side eye to Tampa Bay because they've got to actually, you know, have the drunken celebrations in the streets.
Look, it's where you can do this shit when you have a governor who gives zero fucks about anything and just is like, yeah, no restricting, everyone can do what they want.
I think it was just this last week, like, the White House finally said, oh yeah, we'll invite everyone when it's safe to come up. It's like,
Buccaneers like, fuck it, we're going anyway. We've already done all this. What can it hurt?
Yeah, Tom Brady's going to show up at the front door one day and be like, hey.
Drunk on tequila?
What are you doing here?
Tom Brady's going to be drunk by the door, quote-unquote drunk by the door, but he's going to be holding like a strawberry-flavored like non-alcoholic seltzer, and it's just going to be
a
like...
A wine cooler?
Mr. President, don't tell Giselle.
It's a strawberry
Mr.
white.
President,
what's that
come
white
have
claw?
A, come have a Zima with me.
A Zima. Strawberry. A Zima with a strawberry.
It'll
still
be,
make that shit?
It'll be like a LaCroix. He's all staggering around drunk, and it's like, oh, there's carbon dioxide bubbles in this. It's making me drunk as shit. It's like the small amount of alien chemical that he's not used to putting into his very fragile body ecosystem gets him belligerently wasted.
I think Gronk had to have something to do with it, right?
But Gronk showed up with water.
No, it wasn't Gronk. Gronk was on another boat. There was only like Tom Brady's boat was his family. And the other guy I saw, because he made a special social media post about it, was that like nutritionist that the Patriots told Tom Brady.
Oh, Guerrero, I think it's his name. Guerrero?
Yeah. Yeah. So he's like, oh, he's on the boat. It's like, well, what did he slip him, you know?
Probably. He probably had one shot of tequila. But, you know, if it's good tequila and you don't drink, I guess it could really mess you up. I don't know.
The fact that Gronk showed up with water is astounding. Like he was
disappointing.
Yeah.
Well, because Gronk had been drinking probably since the championship. Because I saw he was the team representative they sent to Disney World to like stand there and answer questions from the media.
Oh yeah.
And like pretend that he was going on roller coasters, and he looked pretty miserable then. Like it's pretty hard to look that miserable at Disneyland after winning a championship, but you could tell that he was like hung the hell over and hadn't slept a whole lot. It was just there in his t-shirt, like, I'm on Thunder Mountain, and okay, it's time to go.
the best part about Tom Brady tossing the Lombardi Trophy was, like, if you watch the video that someone took from his boat, you can hear one of his kids go, Dad, no!
So I have an inside scoop here, possibly, but according to my inside sources, a.k.a. my dear and wonderful girlfriend, she says that word on the street is it's a tequila that Tom Brady will be pushing.
Oh, no.
So get ready for TB12 tequila.
Well, might as well. He's pushing shit.
Is that what you chase the focus pills down with?
Right. It levels you out, Mike. See, the focus pills are basically amphetamines. So you do the tequila to kind of slow you back down a little bit.
Yeah. Because what he said, I think he said on his like drunk tweet that he put out was that it was an avocado tequila. So
yes, yeah.
So that sounds organic. Nasty.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is, you know, he's gonna win another probably two titles before he retires, or like, you know, some horrible injury retires him, and he's gonna basically say like, you know, Tom, you lasted until you were 47 years old playing in the NFL. How did you do it? Was it your workout? Was it your diet? Was it a combination of both? Your sleep? He'll be like, no, it was this avocado tequila. I was like, oh, shit. You know, and there's going to be another one.
One shot before every game, right. And it got me right.
Oh, you know, like, God.
Plug it in his books and shit.
So does that mean that we can have, like, dueling statues at Canton of Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, and one of them's got a tequila bottle and the other's got a Papa John's box?
Peyton Manning would look like a NASCAR driver if he threw all of his endorsements onto his.
Pick a brand, you know. I mean, he's got quite a few of them, but
we were so caught up in talking about the actual Super Bowl last week that we didn't talk about the Hall of Famers that got.
Oh yeah,
oh yeah. What, who's
one of them being Mr. Peyton Manning?
Yeah, Manning's in the Hall.
If there can't be a single argument against that, right?
No,
I mean, there just can't be. No, yeah.
No. I mean, first ballot going away. Like
did
I said,
anyone vote against him?
No, I wouldn't. I don't think they put out the votes because it's a committee that does it, right?
Right. So yeah. Like Peter King wrote about it. He writes about it every year because I think he loves telling everybody that he's part of it. But they get in a room and they basically argue. And they cut it. They start at 15. They argue, so they cut it down to 10, and they argue again until they finally argue enough to finally say, "Okay, these are the guys we're putting in." That's basically how it works. They just fight until they're finished.
So it's not like baseball where we can see who voted for what.
No, but I do want to meet the guys that voted no on Babe Ruth and Hank Aaron and some of the others. I really want to meet these people and go, "What the fuck
it's
are you?"
It's probably a bunch of like crusty old fucks from the 1912 who are like, home runs are a gimmick.
Well, here's a question before I go into the list. Here's an interesting question of because we had the NFL where they put in eight guys, which is kind of the norm, I think.
Yeah,
but then we have a situation this year in baseball where nobody got voted in, and that happens sometimes.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Fuck you, Curt Schilling.
Well, like the some people have criticized the NFL for having these full classes all the time, and maybe there's guys that don't necessarily need to be in there. Well, but then baseball has also been criticized for not putting in enough guys.
Well, we know if Greg's standards were met, each Hall of Fame in every sport would be like five guys. So
just my favorite five guys, though. So I mean, I'll be honest about it.
Kurt, I think Warner, the NFL. Hall of Famer, huh?
I know. I think the NFL is a little lax sometimes. I mean, because they. I think it's they have to do at least seven every season. I could be wrong about that, but I think I heard that somewhere. That seems a lot to me. And some years you're just not going to get seven guys. And if you don't get seven, then go with the five or three or whatever. Baseball, on the other hand, is kind of like, all right, really no one in this class? And I don't know who the class was for baseball this year.
Go ahead.
Sorry, the leading candidates were Schilling, who was 16 votes shy of the minimum.
No.
Who now wants his name removed from the ballot altogether.
He's gone from the ballot, yeah. He requested to be no longer...
Good. Fuck Kurt Schilling, the Nazi asshole.
Barry Bonds was next. And then Roger Clemens.
Yeah.
Bonds is a tough call for me.
Everyone's least favorite assholes from the last 30 years.
Right, but like...
So you need a 75% threshold. Okay.
And just because dudes are assholes, does that mean that we keep them out? I mean, if that's the case, then we should get rid of half the guys that are in the Hall of Fame.
No. Well, this clearly is a look. Well, I don't know what the Schilling thing is. I don't.
The Schilling thing has to be the political side of it, right?
Yeah.
No, he wasn't that good. I'm sorry, he's not a Hall of Famer. I mean, fuck his politics.
But he's got the story, and he got the world championships and the bloody sock. And
I don't care. He's not a Hall of Famer. As simple as that.
Kurt Schilling will be one of those guys who gets in when he's dead. He'll get in when he's dead, long after many years from now, and they'll finally be like, it was 2037, finally, Kurt Schilling makes the – and they'll be like, who the fuck is Kurt Schilling? And then they'll have to explain it because he's been dead for like 3 or 4 years.
No, I really do believe that the politics probably has something to do with it, but at its base level, he's not a Hall of Fame pitcher. If we had a Hall of the really, really good, he'd be in it, but he's not a Hall of Famer in my book. And I know that that's not just me being my normal – impossible to police standards. You know, that's just, I just don't think he's there. He's not like Jack Morris, a guy that I watched pitch a lot living in Toledo when he played for the Tigers. Great pitcher, not a Hall of Famer. Of course, he had some pretty nutty views too, but that's beside the point. And, but he got in and they're basically the same pitcher. And I just think neither one of them deserve it. So that's just me.
And you could go through and quite clean out a decent portion of every Hall of Fame. You know,
and I mean, if I were in charge, I'd do exactly that.
Gary Bettman is in the NHL Hall of Fame, which is just...
But Barry Bonds is a tough one for me because I think he was a Hall of Famer before the steroids. And I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if you can separate that. I mean, I personally would. But
I think we've had this argument before. If we're talking... It's essentially a baseball history museum, right?
Right.
Are we going to just ignore two entire decades of baseball?
Okay.
Like, no.
To answer that... I would use honestly the Pete Rose thing, right? Where the argument has always been the argument for Rose's inclusion has always been like gambled or on baseball or not. You know, he is the all time leading hits leader, and that deserves to be recognized in the Hall of Fame. Except like it is, if you go into the Baseball Hall of Fame, there is an exhibit that goes over Pete Rose's career and the fact that he is the all time. Hits leader. And, the only thing is that he personally is not in the Hall of Fame, but what he accomplished is told. So I think that would be how you would handle someone like Bonds, where you have an exhibit in the hall that goes, yes, Barry Bonds is the all-time home run leader, but, steroids happened. And here's an exhibit about the steroid era and how that affected the game. And we're not going to put Barry Bonds the person.
So he gets a Hall of Fame kiosk, essentially.
You can have like a little cutout of him waving. He's got a syringe in one hand, and sure.
Well, so the thing is with the Hall of Fame too that you have to factor into these guys who are still alive is that if you get named as a Hall of Famer in whatever sport, then you get to like everything you do. If your signings, public appearances, all this stuff. You get exponentially more money as a Hall of Famer. It opens up a huge new revenue stream for these guys to get when they're latter stages of their life. Obviously, their playing careers are now over. They get to say, I'm Hall of Famer, blah, 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 and I'll be signing things at this car dealership or whatever, and I'll be making three times as much money as I would if I wasn't a Hall of Famer. But that's what I think that, you know, with Kurt Schilling and Bonds and a lot of these steroids guys, they'll be posthumously named to the Hall of Fame class, so they can't milk the Hall of Fame
badge for more
money.
Like, I honestly believe that Pete Rose will be inducted into the Hall of Fame, the class selection after he dies. Because
that's a lot of these guys, you know. I mean,
I don't think he's allowed to be voted in though, Mike, because he's banned.
My point is that because it's a lifetime ban.
I see. Yeah, you're right.
So
once
he's dead, you know. So I could see that happening because it's like that's the ultimate, I think, compromise where they go, okay, we're going to put him in for, you know, what he accomplished, but, you know, we still made sure that the lifetime ban meant a lifetime ban.
But they never did that with Joe Jackson. And frankly, he's a better player than Pete Rose, maybe not as prolific stat-wise, but definitely
that's
a Hall of Famer.
Thing. I mean, well, the thing is, though, with the Black Sox scandal thing, like that is so much bigger than what Pete Rose did by a monumental.
Yeah,
they
rigged the entire World Series.
Like, sure, yeah. Pete Rose bet on his own team to win, not to lose.
Well, you know, my argument for Rose would be, are you judging him as a player or as a manager? Because the gambling, and again, he may have gambled while he was a player too, but they never went after him for that. So are we judging him as a player? Because if it's just as a player, he should be in. But baseball, the Baseball Hall of Fame has this character clause. And, you know, then there's the ban. If you get banned, you're not allowed to be in and all that. But I think that what he did, you know, was when he was managing the Reds in the 80s, he probably bad all along, but that's what they caught him doing. I can't imagine he thought, oh, maybe I'll start gambling in 1983.
I think the big thing is that, like, don't gamble on baseball is like rule one in every Major League Baseball clubhouse. So it's like one of those things where it's like Pete, like literally the one thing we asked you not to do.
And I'm sure the podcast back in the 30s and 40s had guys saying the same thing about Joe Jackson.
Sure. And I mean,
well, Joe Jackson's the reason it's rule one.
Exactly. You know, that's you know, I have never been dissatisfied with the NFL Hall of Fame class. And, you know, over the years, you might have like questions like, you know, I don't know. But like I've always been relatively pleased with every time I see a project. Like, it's interesting. Yeah. It's satisfying.
Like, occasionally
there's never a selection in the NFL Hall of Fame, at least that I can remember, where you go, that guy shouldn't be in. I mean, I'm sure Greg could name a few off the top of his head, but like personally from my less than perfect bar to meet, like I've never seen a guy selected for the NFL Hall of Fame where I've gone, really?
Well, let's look at this year's list then.
So we got Peyton Manning, obviously.
Peyton Manning, top build. I mean, he was a Hall of Famer by, you know, the seventh year of his career.
Forever a Bronco.
my first and forever favorite football player. Congratulations to Peyton. Mm-hmm. Alan Faneca, guard for the Pittsburgh Steelers for many years, and then the Jets and Cardinals.
I'm going to use the Greg corollary on this. If he's an offensive lineman and I've heard of him, he's probably a Hall of Famer.
Right, exactly. Tom Flores finally gets in, head coach of the Oakland / LA Raiders. Won a Super Bowl?
Yeah, he won two. Won 80 and 83. Yeah, yeah, okay.
Arguably underrated, by the way, if you look at like the breadth. Like, I think people tend to associate, like, when you talk about like the Raiders' golden years and the success that they had, I think people tend to associate Davis and Manning with that. And Davis and Madden with that. And so Tom Flores, you know, getting his due.
Nice. Well, he won more Super Bowls than John Madden did. Yeah. Simple as that. Yeah. So there you go.
Two Super Bowls, Coach of the Year, third division title. I mean, he's definitely qualified. Go ahead, Zach. Sorry.
I'd heard the name, but I hadn't given him any thought of anything until he started showing up in those Coors Light commercials this year.
Yeah.
Where it was like, oh, we're putting him on the can. And I was like, oh, is this guy not in the Hall? He's not in the Hall of Fame. Sounds like he should be. And then this happens to be the year where he gets in. I'm like, oh, well, I guess that sounds deserved then. Calvin Johnson. Calvin Johnson's an interesting test case for what this generation of football is going to be like, because he played from 2007 to 2015. You know, not only 9 seasons.
Yeah, 135
games. 135
games.
7,000 plus receiving yard seasons. He was the best receiver in the league when he was in it. But then you kind of question, like, okay, well, when you compare it to other guys that are in the Hall of Fame, I guess we have to just change our parameters of what is a Hall of Fame guy.
I think
Calvin Johnson's a no-brainer. I think, you got to put him in.
In terms of that, I think it's not so much Calvin Johnson. I think you have to look back at Terrell Davis. Terrell Davis is in the Hall of Fame. He only played 78 NFL games.
Yeah.
Well, that I think, too, that it's not just longevity. It's got to be what was your impact when you played. And I mean, Calvin Johnson.
Six straight years of Pro Bowler. And, I mean, on the shitty Lions, too. The guy retired because, like, when this
– He didn't want to put up with the shitty Lions.
No, he pulled the Sanders. He's like, fuck this franchise. I'm fucking retiring. Screw you guys. Like, he retired at, what, 33, 34, yeah. something like that?
Yeah.
And he's dominant.
He was definitely dominant. I find this – so the NFL Hall, or the Hall of Fame has all the, these bios that I'm reading from. Mm-hmm. His nickname was obviously Megatron, right? Mm-hmm. Well, this is what the Hall of Fame thinks that he was named Megatron for.
It is ridiculous. I'm reading the same page you are.
Strong robotic-like abilities on the field.
No.
somebody Googled Megatron. They didn't know what the reference is, and they're like, it's a robotic ass. Maybe
he's a very big robot. Okay.
Wasn't it? I remember watching an interview he did where, like, apparently he just found the whole scene from the first Transformers movie funny, where Megatron is like, "I am Megatron," and he people just started calling him that. Like,
Wikipedia says
huge.
Wikipedia says that fellow teammate and wide receiver Roy Williams nicknamed him Megatron due to his large hands being similar to that of the towering Decepticon, and the nickname caught on with fans.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's a cool nickname. I mean, it makes sense for him because, I mean, what, 6'5", 240 pounds or something? He's massive, dude.
Just saying, he's strong and robotic. Like, huh? No.
He was anything but robotic. I think a robotic
huge, like Megatron, who's huge. I mean, I guess we could have called him Optimus Prime, but like.
Yeah, it doesn't roll. Easy.
Megatron's cool. Whatever.
I like the name a lot.
So I think that the one thing, sadly, that I think that Calvin Johnson is remembered for, to me, more than anything, and this is to show his, like, dog shit legacy, not his dog shit, Lions dog shit legacy, is the issue with the Bears here. I'll just show you his brief.
Oh, the no catch.
Yeah. So he got screwed here. And just remember, there's no sound.
Calvin Johnson rule.
Yeah, I remember. I'm not even a Lions fan, and this pissed me off when it happened.
This is one of those. This is right in the thick of when they were trying to figure out the rules of what is and is not a catch, and be like follow through. So catch
2 feet. That's a 110,000% a catch.
Yeah,
I don't. Yeah, I mean, come on. And then you've got the other rule that, and then look, that wasn't a fumble because it's in the end zone. But they said the ground can't cause a fumble.
Right.
Well, if he does that, but.
Yeah, and then there's the whole make a football move and all this stuff. Like,
that's pretty much a football move there, I think.
He reached over another man and grabbed it. Like, what?
His two feet hit the ground, then his ass hits the ground, then his plant arm hits the ground, and then he puts the football down.
That's a catch. Like,
it's a catch like four different times.
I mean, from the perspective of a Bears fan watching it, I mean, I think it, universally, people were like, "That? How did the Bears get away with that?" Like, that's.
I've had plays like that watching football my whole life, where I go, "Wow!" Like with the Browns, like, "Man, we just got away with one there." Or, "Boys, you know, we just screwed them." And I think that was the case with that. I mean, my goodness.
That and the Dez Bryant catch was another one like that in the.
Yeah, the Dez Bryant, and I'm not saying that it wasn't a catch, but it was more debatable than what we just watched.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
let's keep going through the list before we get
to it. Yeah. Next up was John Lynch, famed safety for the Buccaneers and a couple years with the Broncos.
Okay. What do you guys think of that one? I'm not so sure I'm on board with that one.
No, I'm fine with it.
Okay.
As far as I'm concerned, he was like the impact secondary player of his generation.
Right? Yeah. Okay. I think safeties are, you know, there's like, he played, what, 10 years for the Bucs, Pro Bowl safety play.
I didn't realize he played that long. All right.
Yeah.
15 seasons total. Yeah.
Yeah. He finished with the Broncos, but he's always known as a Buccaneer, and he was, And plus, as safeties, there's very few safeties. So I think it's important for the league to kind of, you know, to nominate and, you know, recognize the
And we'll find out how good of a GM he is if the teams he fields can stay healthy long enough. So.
Or, well, yeah. I mean, eventually he'll find a quarterback at some point.
Yeah.
So what, we have Bill Nunn?
Yeah. I'd seen a some sort of video piece on him earlier in the year where he was, and it kind of describes it here, that he was very influential in scouting the historic Still black colleges and universities, getting guys, you know, like John Stallworth, Mel Blount, Donnie Schell, as they list here. He was basically kind of revolutionized scouting in the 70s and was part of why the Steelers had the dynasty they did at the time. And then he stayed with them for 47 seasons as a scout. So. Mm.
It's kind of like a career recognition kind of thing for him.
Yeah, he died, unfortunately, in 2014.
So he was born in 1924. Good God.
Yeah.
He was like in his 20s when the Bears were rolling through NFL titles in the 40s. Good Lord.
So this is one
Chicago tops Washington.
This is one for Greg to comment on. Drew Pearson of the Dallas Cowboys. Played 11 seasons from 73 to 83.
Greg, I think, is so disgusted by – it's like he hasn't heard the name Drew Pearson in
No,
many
I'm
years.
Here. What's the problem?
So you're
did
not
old
react.
Enough to know who Drew Pearson is.
No, I was saying he was kind of – I mean, not like nearly as dominant as Megatron, but kind of like a similar guy, just a short career, but really a great player.
Yeah, he's 6 feet, 184 pounds. So Megatron's a little bigger than him. But
yeah, but I'm trying to think of like a comparable player to him today would be Julio West Jones, Walker? Maybe.
Oh. Well, for us, he was on the other end of the play that gave rise to the term Hail Mary.
Yeah,
Rodgers drawback in the
against the Vikings. Yep,
against the Vikings. Yeah,
he was a great player. He was. I'm surprised it took this long to put him in. Honestly. So Drew Pearson gets my endorsement.
And then the last one, again, I think another obvious no-brainer, Charles Woodson.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 18 seasons with the Raiders and the Packers. I mean, an incredible career, whether you include his college career or his time with Oakland and Green Bay, really. Like, just another –
Can't believe
Impact
he never won a title.
There on the edge.
Did he win a title? Did he win one with Green Bay?
Yeah, he won with the Packers. I know sure.
Yeah, he won in that the Steelers Super Bowl.
Gotcha.
And he's from Fremont, Ohio, which is about a half hour from where I'm from.
And again, as a cornerback, 50 interceptions, great, but 20 sacks too.
Yeah,
that's pretty incredible.
My only issue with him is he played at Michigan, but other than that, good guy.
This whole thing reminds me a little bit of when I said the Peyton Manning Broncos forever thing. That's a reference to Reddit several years ago when the Vikings were putting up their new stadium. The NFL subreddit bought a brick because they made a hall of, you know, big NFL hall, brick pathway to the stadium. And one of them bought a brick that says, in commemoration of Brett Favre, a Viking forever.
that's
still there, I think.
That's the equivalent of what was it, Marty Berdur being on the Blues
all time great players list. Yeah,
yeah.
Honestly, it's a bit cheeky. They even put Gretzky on there.
Well, I mean, he at least played meaningful games.
Time, yeah, that's fair.
He was in a playoff series with them.
Yes.
I think he was on the ice for that Iserman goal that everybody.
Yeah, I think he was the.
Did he play a full season in St. Louis?
Half season, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say. I remember, like, he showed up and played, and then he was gone after that. Right? Did he go to the Rangers after that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, in the off season. I don't know. Do we have any other sports stuff going on, guys?
We can talk about the reverse retro jerseys that have. Come out on the ice.
Yeah, give me some of the ones that have been making. I saw the Coyotes one the other day.
Yeah, so the Coyotes played last night in theirs. I have a list.
It's all right. I don't know.
I mean, I think it looks great on the ice.
And that's the real Coyotes test. One.
We talked about the Maple Leaf one already, didn't we? Yeah.
Yes, not good.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Coyotes, I'll go backwards in terms of time, like who's gone on. So the Coyotes, we just talked about the Panthers, more boring on the ice. Like they look nice, but they're boring.
I think they'd look better if they were red, I think.
Yeah. Okay. So Vegas has two stupid things that we need to talk about. So first, let's get the reverse retro out of the way. The red, I think it looks much better on the ice than I anticipated. I like the way the red pops. The design is nice to me. It looks pretty inoffensive. I got to watch it for a full game against the Ducks. It looked okay.
Yeah, it looks fine. Right? It's perfectly acceptable.
Okay. Now, screw the stupid retros. These assholes in their golden helmets.
Yeah, that's a problem. Crap.
Like,
Andy, find a picture of those. We have to show these just in case people haven't seen them yet.
Like, okay. Yes. The Notre Dame
wears gold. Vegas Knights.
Notre Dame wears gold helmets for their hockey jerseys because the football team does, and it kind of matches. Like, the gold that they use in the helmets sort of matches the golds on the jerseys. It's college. You're allowed to kind of do that. I don't mind it there. The minor league team in Vegas, the Silver Knights, has been wearing silver lids all season long, and
that same style, that kind of chromey looking reflective. Yeah, stuff.
So not great, but it's the minor leagues, and it's who really cares?
Yeah, that's gimmicky fun,
but,
you know.
But this looks like garbage. Like beyond that, it's kitschy as all hell. It just looks terrible because it doesn't match the Knights' like fabric gold. It doesn't match anything really. It was terrible to look at. Again, they played against the Ducks, and thankfully the Ducks beat them that game. So hopefully they don't wear those things ever again.
Okay,
but just like,
yeah,
like, there's leagues in Europe that do this with whoever the leading scorer is wears gold helmets like during the year. Like one guy though, just one guy.
This just furthers Greg's dislike of anything European.
But these look terrible.
What do you mean? I don't what dislike of European stuff. What are you talking about?
No. I was trying to make a belabored Greg doesn't like soccer joke.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, that's true.
Yeah, I don't. I see what they were going for here, but it's the same exact problem that Notre Dame has in football, to where it's like you have the shiny gold helmet, and then you have this kind of non as reflective metallic. Anyway, I think the gold kind of is metallic on their uniforms, but compared to that, it looks so jarring and just bad.
It looks ostentatious and it looks gaudy, and I know some people are going to go, "Well, that's Vegas, LOL."
Right.
But no. All right. At a certain point, you've got to leave the local tie-in stuff, you know, in the back because you just look stupid. And this is one of those cases. They look stupid.
And I think it was a major mistake for them to wear them with the regular jerseys because they like Andy kind of laid out. They don't work. I'd be kind of curious to see them with the gold third jersey monstrosities they have.
That's gonna look hideous.
There they are.
It's gonna look awful.
Like the gold jerseys too are pretty goddamn terrible. Why is Vegas singled out the Ducks to like do all these uniform experiments against?
Just
like,
to piss you off, mostly. Yeah.
But like, because the Ducks had to see the gold jerseys in the first series of the season, then we saw the red jerseys and the gold helmets on back to back nights. What do we do? What happened? But yeah, that just in so many different ways. All right.
Yeah, trying to find
any last thoughts on the gold helmets.
Here we go. I've got to share this. Hold on. Is it still up there?
I don't see anything yet.
All right, hold on. I'm going to share this. Hold on 1 second. This is perfect. Let me get the picture here. There he is. Okay. No, I don't want updates. Thank you. And
thrilling radio content.
Well, you guys keep talking. You don't have to just sit here and wait for me.
Well, we were waiting. Okay.
I know, but I had to. There was a bunch of shit that popped up on the screen.
I'm looking for. Sorry, right. I'm distracted too. Looking for the Capitals in their reverse retros, the red ones.
They haven't worn those?
Here we go.
Well, they haven't worn them yet. Okay.
Caps haven't worn them yet.
Oh wait, no, that's the wrong one. But anyway, you see them on the right there. I think they should go like that. Should be the helmet what that guy's wearing. Next time,
Yeah.
So when are they wearing those? When is the Washington going
to
be wearing
them? I think they were supposed to wear them on the 9th, but that game got postponed due to COVID.
Oh,
so
okay.
It got moved.
When are the Ducks breaking out the Wild Wing?
That's another thing. Like the COVID postponements have kind of screwed up the reverse retro schedule. So like the Ducks won't be wearing theirs until April now. And the two times that they're going to wear it this year, only two times, which is a crime. They're only going to wear it in two games in April, and that's it. So,
COVID. Am I adding this, Andy?
Those moments have kind of.
This is the Panthers rolling there from the other day.
Those are all right.
Yeah,
I think the idea of the uniform is nice. I would just like to see the blue and the red switched, like have a red base.
That feels more Panthers to me. Yeah.
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 Now the question is. Now the question we're all waiting to see answered is when were the Red Wings debut their stupid generic template jerseys?
let me see if I can pull it up because the Mothership has an article with all the schedules for these things that they've been able to find.
Truthfully, by the way, I'm not a fan of the Coyotes. It's fine alternate, but I feel like the dark green and dark red original look is the way to go.
Absolutely.
I think the purple just pops so much more because I think the green was too muted.
No, but I mean, that's fine. And I like that this would be an alternate. That's the thing is this could be a nice third, but I want them to stick with the muted green and muted red. Like I love the Kachina, everything else. Like that is to me what the guy who's should always be.
Oh, everyone with the Kachina. No, I'm
kidding. Get out of here, Mike.
So anyway, going back in time further, Calgary debuted the Blasty, the horse.
Yeah, those look good.
I was kind of surprised at how well they looked on the ice.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of them personally, as far as like when I saw the announcement of them wearing them. But once I saw them on the ice, I'm like, yeah, those look pretty fucking good.
It's a nice change of pace from the retro primaries that they went with because it's like. I don't think black ever necessarily was bad for the Flames, but it just never really should have been their primary look. And, you know, if they can break out the Blasty uniforms every now and then good on them.
Yeah. Previous to then the team just before Calgary was the Preds with their throwback.
Oh, there's the Flames real quick, guys.
I love those pant stripes, by the way.
Yeah, they look good. Yeah. So the Predators.
I like it, but I would love them to have that as a third still.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost too jarring of a change from the retros that they've embraced for the mm-hmm. the home and the road. I like to have a little bit more cohesion in my uniform set. Yeah, like I understand that it's supposed to look way different, but
you want cohesion, but then you also just advocated for a giant purple jersey with a.
I'll defend that. That still works with like the Kachina stuff.
It works with the Coyotes, and I feel like that the Splasty is I totally fine for the Flames third. If they have they go to the proper Flaming Sea white and red and yellow for both home and away, and then have that as a third, you're done. You've need to change nothing else about your aesthetic. The Flames are complete. In my opinion, the Coyotes, same thing. You go with Kachina home and away, and then you have the purple alt. Then you're set. Leave these things alone forever. Please stop fucking with them. Thank you.
Since the last time we talked about them, the Habs debuted their blue.
Oh,
I know Mike hates.
Let's have a look.
I'm looking forward to it.
But here's my thought on them. They are very good. They're very beautiful jerseys. The Reds are superior.
Like, of course they are.
It looks properly French. Like there's no doubt about it. That is a French ass team.
Mm-hmm.
But
this does look weird.
The Montreal Canadiens in blue is a travesty.
Here we go. We ready? You got it?
This one will have to do. Yeah. So I mean, you can kind of see. Just
what.
They're nice, but they're not the Reds, right?
No, yeah. I mean they look okay. I mean they're
yeah.
Yeah, you almost got to go with like red shorts, red breezes with that. You can't.
You got to have red shorts. That's the thing. Yeah.
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 It's not a bad alt. I mean, if for the Canadiens, I mean, you can't. You don't really have a whole lot of flexibility with their look. I mean,
you could argue that the Montreal Canadiens are one of those teams that maybe shouldn't have an alternate.
If they were going to have one, I would suggest remember the one they wore for one of the Winter Classics? It was like the 1940s. It was like it had blue.
Yeah,
it was like it was beautiful.
I love that. I love that uniform. Yeah. I'm pulling up here.
But it still looked like the Canadiens, but it was just a little switch, and it was just so nice. So go with that. That's a really great jersey. Yeah.
This is amazing. Yeah, here, I'll show it real quick. It's one of my favorites from any of the Winter Classics.
Mine too. Absolutely. One. Here we go.
That looks fucking
amazing. Those are beauts. Yeah. The thing that I love about those Winter Classic jerseys is the collar that they went with, mm-hmm. where they make it really look like a retro like sweater.
Yeah. I just love that I love the red, like this, the way they've done the crest looks really mm-hmm. nice.
Blue is slightly lighter.
Right, the brighter blue. This is a damn good uniform. Just damn good. Well done.
Al, even keep the stupid globe on the arm. Do it.
Fuck yeah.
What does the globe represent?
They were the world champions.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
There was a year where the Montreal Canadiens switched out their logo on the front for a globe because they were the world champions of hockey.
The Indians did that after, I think it was 1920 when they won the World Series. They wore world champions, apostrophe S, on their jerseys.
Let's see. Tampa debuted their blues, which I think we all agree that that's like Tampa Bay should look like.
Like Tampa's is one of those where you go, dear Lightning, why isn't this your regular uniform?
Well, are we not liking the Tampa Bay red Leafs anymore?
Maple wings.
Well, speaking of the Lightning, that kind of ties into the Vegas helmet thing, right? Because Tampa Bay's regular alternates, for those who are unaware, are those black jerseys with like grayed out logos, and it's got like this grayed black gradient along.
Yeah, disgusting.
Yeah, they look awful.
Absolutely, it's disgusting.
They look awful. What?
I love that jersey.
God, no.
I think the Black Chaos Class is talking about the jersey I'm talking about here. But anyway, we'll move along.
The point is that after the Golden Knights debuted their stupid golden helmets, somebody who used to work in the Lightning, you know, front office, went on Twitter and said that.
Look at that blue.
Now that's so good.
Boom. That's what it should be, baby. Right there.
No.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not talking about that jersey.
Oh shit. What are we talking about?
No, what I'm talking about is
grayscale jerseys.
It's like the current grayscale like alternate jersey.
Yeah.
I'll have to look them up here. Give me a minute.
But anyway,
the regular ones are fine.
Yeah.
Oh no. No.
Yeah, see?
No.
See? Yeah. See? Yeah. That's not good. It's disgusting. But like
somebody's fired. This needs to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a broke ass. Like I picked this up at Target.
No. That's a broke ass. You know, I went to print out my jersey concept and like
ran out of color ink,
black and white ink. But no,
that's a public special right there. Come on.
But yeah, when Vegas unveiled their golden helmets, somebody who used to work in the Lightning's front office went to Twitter and said that, like, apparently Vegas had been planning on doing this for a few years now. And word had gotten to, like, the Lightning front office that they wanted to do chrome helmets. And that was around the time that those stupid grayscale jerseys were being considered. And this person and a few other people in the Lightning front office suggested, hey, we should wear silver chrome helmets with these and beat Vegas to the punch. And he said that the reason it didn't happen was that there was some support for it, but people up the chain of command weren't receptive.
And the Kings did silver helmets for their outdoor game at Air Force.
Did they?
Year. Yeah. Not good.
Just don't do chrome helmets, NHL teams. Yeah. You look...
I would take that.
I can deal with it in college. I can deal with it in the minor leagues, but like
Well, it's not like a pro look. I mean, it's like you look in college, right? And Michigan, the Wolverines, wear the helmet wing on theirs to mimic the football team, right? And it's like
Ohio State does the same thing. Penn State does the same thing.
And it's like for college, you know, you're paying homage to the football team, which is like the most culturally relevant, you know, sport of your university. It's fine. But like, if any team tried to do like the Michigan helmet wing in the NHL, they'd be rightfully ridiculed for it. And remember,
for those outdoor games when Pittsburgh and Philly did those giant logos on the helmet.
Oh, when they tried to mimic the football teams, yeah.
Yeah, no.
It's not great. It's just bad, but yeah, the Lightning grayscale uniforms are awful. But like their classic black look and their reverse retro blue look.
Yeah.
Nice. Like, go back to that, Tampa.
Speaking of gray, Winnipeg debuted the steel.
Oh, there's this the Kings in the silver helmet. That's not as chromey. At least it doesn't look like it. It's a little more.
Bad in that picture, but it's definitely chrome.
Is it?
You know, real quick on the Ohio State thing, Zach. You know that there's a lot of like fans that don't like that the hockey team does that.
A lot of football fans or a lot of the hockey fans?
A lot of the football fans are like pissed.
Yeah, of course they don't.
And it's like, you know, it's like they look fucking awesome. Are you kidding me?
That's our thing.
That's our thing.
You're all the same athletic department, you goons.
We all went to the same school, morons. You know, but most of them didn't go to the school. They just, I don't like it. It's the football team. It's like, no.
Look, they weren't there to play school, all right?
Anyway, I didn't want to get bogged down in that. But, yeah, there were a lot of people that were pissed that they wore those helmets. Yeah.
But
Winnipeg debuted the jet fuel gray jersey.
These look terrible.
Fucking sacrilege. I'm trying to find – I just had a picture.
Didn't we – I thought we thought those were okay when we did the preview.
I don't like it. Like, I
think in a vacuum, I think they're fine. When it's the Winnipeg Jets – and their history, like, I don't like it.
Especially when you consider that the uniform that's based off of, right, is kind of colorful and it pops.
Yeah.
And then you just do, like, this, like, dull gray version of it. It loses something. Like, the best alternates that the new Winnipeg Jets have had, I think, have been their Heritage Classic jerseys, which are kind of like throwbacks. But, like, this is just not good.
It
could have been so much better.
Like maybe again, it's a fine idea concept, but it's not.
Yeah, there. Like that's much better.
That's the goddamn Jets right there.
Yeah,
I know, and they've been wearing this a lot too. I don't know how I feel about this. The stroking on the numbers is really awkward to me.
I kind of like the baby blue. It's a good tie into their Atlanta days.
Yeah, it's fine. And
blue Atlanta. Or there's just little things
I wish they would change, but
see, if they really wanted to tie into their Atlanta days, Zach, they'd have a shoulder yoke, but only on one shoulder.
They'd put the name across the front and numbers underneath.
Oh, and get Chris Chelios to come back and wear it.
the Blues wore their reds, and they were very quick on social media to remind people, you know, that we're not named after the color, right? We're named after the music, and it's like,
shut up, Blues.
It doesn't matter. You call yourself the Blues. You don't get to be red. I don't care if you named it after the music or not. I get it, but no.
In the Blue Jackets also wore their red sweaters, which
I maintain can only be justified if they would have put the Stinger logo on the shoulders, but they didn't. So.
Columbus, what is it? Columbus Jackets Blue is the logo. Jackets Blue. Yeah. We didn't need to show those. They fucking suck. Well, go ahead if you want to, but just think they're original jerseys, but in red.
You can show one that doesn't suck as bad if you want to find the Rangers who put up the Lady Liberties. Now, the logo is still untouchable. Like, that's just a great NHL logo that needs to exist in some form constantly.
Mm-hmm.
But they all have different gloves, and it's not that they're not fully white as I like feared, but they have more white on them than you would think. And then there's the lack of an extra stripe somewhere. It seems like the whole thing is just like not clicking in a way that it could.
The problem with the Lady Liberty reverse retros is that they're basically just the actual Lady Liberty jerseys with elements removed. So you look at them and you kind of get this sense that it's not right.
Yeah.
What did you guys think? I don't know if you might be too young to remember when they first debuted those Lady Liberties. What did you think?
They were so cool.
I actually do remember it because my grandfather was actually in town. We were watching hockey, you know, with my grandpa, and he, you know, being an older fellow, very traditionally minded, and we were watching a Rangers game. The Rangers came out in the Lady Liberty jerseys, and I thought they were the coolest things ever. and then my grandfather was like, "Nope, I don't like them. It's not the Rangers." Like, he was very adamant that this was wrong. He also didn't like the Bruins Pooh Bear jerseys, so at least he was consistent. But
when they first came, it only took me about 3 days. But the first time I saw them, I'm like, "Oh no, you know, these aren't the Rangers." But then I'm like, "Well, I don't know, that looks pretty cool." No, I think it's one of the great NHL jerseys. I just love it. I've got two of them.
I'm kind of a hipster when it comes to the Lady Liberty jerseys, and that my favorite one is the white version they wore for a season.
I love that white one. I had a chance to get one of those and didn't get it. I still kick myself.
If I ever have an opportunity to get a white Lady Liberty jersey, I'm taking it because it's just so good. But yeah, I don't know. You look at this jersey and in your mind, you have in your mind what the Lady Liberty jersey should be. And this just is the same thing, but less of it.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
This jersey blows. I don't know what you guys are on. This the crest is fine. The
new version's not good.
No, you've lost the red on the sleeves. It's just too much.
There's simultaneously too much and too little going on. And
I always thought that the updated Ranger shield was like brilliant. I love that.
You are cool.
It just oh my god.
The shitty beach, and then there's the Blues there.
Well, good. They're getting scored on. They should feel bad for that.
they did lose to the Coyotes as punishment for their hubris.
For their sins.
Well, those are some bad pads that goalie was wearing, too, man. Those were ugly.
Yeah, well, it's a hideous color combination. You got bright blue, really bright red, and bright yellow. And it's like just crap.
Welcome to the Marine Corps.
But
is that it for the jerseys?
I think that's all.
The last one was the Kings one that I'm trying to...
I really liked the Kings one.
Was it the purple one?
I had a specific picture that I wanted to share. But
the
I'll
King,
just, I'll send,
like,
we'll put the link in. How about that?
The Kings are that uniform. Sorry, that Kings uniform is the one where you kind of just go like that, and the Lightning. Those are the two where you go, this should be the primary right now.
Yeah, the return to silver and black I thought was nice at the time, but you got it. Oh, yeah, just do get punched in the fucking face.
it looks great.
Zach agrees that the King's jersey, you know, is nice, but can only appreciate it when a king is being punched by a duck.
Yeah, well, great look. The Kings lost that night, too, so it was a really good time to see it. No, and, just looking at them, they look so much more dynamic than the silver and black. They look like they have a little bit of life to them.
Yeah.
And as much as they hate them, it's just like, man, that's a solid looking sweater.
My biggest gripe with the traditional gold and purple Kings jerseys were always it was always the logo. I never liked that crown. But you replace that crown with the Gretzky era crest, and suddenly the problems go away.
Yeah.
It's just a really sharp look. And, you know, as much as it is just marketing speak, I do kind of like the blend of eras, right? Where you've got, the original Kings, you know, you've got that original Kings look from their founding, and you've got, the Gretzky era jersey design and logo. And, the only thing missing is, you know, the black and purple era, but, nobody remembers Jamie Sturr or gives a shit, so why not?
I do.
Adam Dedmarsh.
Jason Allison, Felix Potvin, Dan Cloutier, the rotating door of Kings goalies from back then.
Mm. The glory days, really.
I think of Dedmarsh more as a guy for the Avalanche than the Kings. Right?
Yeah. Zygmunt Palfy.
Ziggy Palfy. Come on now.
That's an Obi-Wan moment. I haven't heard that name in a long time.
Chaos Blast, yeah, we talked about these are just the ones that we didn't talk about yet.
Yeah, we talked about the North Stars last week.
The North Stars,
the Wild, the Wild, the Oilers, and the Leafs. We all talked about.
Yes.
I believe we talked about the retro Penguins, right?
Yes, yeah. I like them. I like them. Nobody else does. That's all right.
They're fine. They're just.
Oh, I thought they were okay. Yeah.
I'm one of those. Maybe it's just because like.
I think the Rangers do it better, but yeah, I like it.
No, I've always liked the diagonal Rangers script, and the Rangers always look fantastic in it, but I've always liked it when other teams have experimented with it, you know, except the Hurricanes. The only reason I don't like that is because they abbreviated their name. Like, spell out Hurricanes in full, you idiots, but I liked it when the Penguins did it in the 90s. I like this. And honestly, my favorite ever Colorado Avalanche jersey is the one that had Colorado across the chest. So
I'm partial to the Redneck Rangers. I'm kidding.
The Redneck Rangers. But yeah, I mean, I appreciate it when teams try the diagonal thing out. Like, obviously, I don't think any team should rock it full time unless they're the Rangers. But when another team does it, you know, well, I'm always happy to see it.
Before we get out of here, we would do ourselves a disservice if we didn't remind people that later this week we'll have uploaded our interview with Chris Kremer and Paul Lucas. We're talking to them on Wednesday, and they just put out episode 2 of their new podcast, Unified. So that'll be fun. Talk to Chris and Paul a little bit and kind of get an idea of
six people on a match. It ought to be interesting.
Demand Paul Lucas explain his hatred of purple.
You know, yeah, I had a question regarding the purple. I think I had a question regarding something else.
When we interviewed him on the Logo Cast years and years ago, mm-hmm. he was going off on purple. And he's like, it's never looked good. And I said, so you're telling me that the 70s Vikings didn't look good? And he was like, yeah, okay, fine. I'll give you that one. So he's not completely anti-purple. But
he seems like a very interesting cat. And I feel like listening to the podcast with them is really – it kind of sheds some light on the types of personalities and in the way they look at sports and graphic design and just design in general. Like, mm-hmm. and I don't want to get into it too much now because we've obviously going to talk to them in a couple of days, but they're very different the way they look at logos. And obviously that goes for everybody, but for those two in particular, because they're, you know, something of authorities on the subject, they definitely think about logos and graphic design very differently, and it makes for a good show.
And Chris thinks about it the right way, and Paul thinks about it the wrong way. We have to be loyal to our, you know,
to our benevolent overlord.
Right. Yeah, we're going to be on board with Paul until he retweets us, and then we'll go turn against him. So that's fine. But yeah, that'll be fun. That'll be cool to talk to those guys. Sort of being one of our, is that the first interview of the show, kind of?
Admiral, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Fuck, the lost interview, Admiral. Admiral interview someday.
The
we'll
lost
find that fucking thing.
Admiral interview. We will.
I'm sure we've had other people on, haven't we?
Well, but I mean, this is like a formal kind of.
Yeah, thing, no. The only other thing that comes to mind is when we had McCarthy on the show for an ep.
Yeah, but he was sitting up for Zach that week.
Yeah. But
wow.
Like,
well, we always talked about getting an interview. It took us 9 years, but here we are. We're gonna.
Here we go.
It's about fucking time. Right on the schedule.
What time?
Yeah, look for that. I don't know if it'll be up Wednesday night, but probably later this week.
Probably Thursday. Well, it depends. I mean, if it's, you know, if it's smooth and everything's clean and all that, we'll throw it right up.
Yeah, and we'll see how it goes.
If it needs a little editing, if we need to trim it a little bit, then it might take a little bit longer. But we'll know.
So, you know, maybe we'll follow this up with Tom O'Grady. Who knows?
I don't have 5 hours to waste on that asshole.
Before we're done, I'd like to give a shout out to our fantasy hockey league, where. In the beloved CHL, where myself, the Thunder Bay Bolts, and Dennis's Los Angeles Red Cars are the only two undefeated teams left in the CHL.
Whatever.
Everybody else is around 2-2.
Nobody gives
around,
a shit.
We got me and Dennis. Fair enough to leave.
Well, since we're gonna put a shout out to our fantasy sports teams, I would like to give a little shout out to my Toledo Jeeps. Of the fantasy basketball league on the boards.
How did things go with Bruce this week on the Jeeps?
What?
Bruce Springsteen Jeeps.
Oh.
Did you have to fire him as your mascot?
Yeah, right. I forgot about that. We should have talked about that because I thought it was hilarious myself. But you put out this pompous fucking commercial and then.
The arrest happened in November, though.
Yeah.
So weird.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But yeah, so my Jeeps are 8-0. We just beat the Vancouver Huskies, I think they're called, and they were six and one, and now they're 6-2. And as always, as Dennis will point out, the Jeeps are just stomping out. Oh, Mike, you know the Sugis, you're in the league. Mm-hmm. The Jeeps just keep rolling, baby. That's all. There's nothing you can do but just get out the way.
I would like to give a shout out to the CHL, my Montreal Maroons. Get your fucking act together.
I think I beat you last week.
No, we tied. This week,
oh, did we tie?
We tied.
All right, yeah.
Which meant nobody's happy. Get your God damn it, Malkin, you bum. Jesus Christ. Okay.
My team's in such fucking disarray. I have to carry three goalies, but that's beside the point.
I have no fantasy teams going, so you're welcome. I have no fantasy.
But anyway, we will talk to Chris and Paul on Wednesday. Yep. We'll get it out as fast as possible, and it should be good. And we're doing that over Zoom, right? That's not going to be live, by the way, folks. That will be recorded because
that'll be uploaded. Yeah, later.
Yeah, we're gonna make sure that we don't have any internet issues or anything with it. And if we do, we can stop and fix it, and it won't be a disaster.
Right.
All right. So is that it, boys? We ready to call it a night?
Yeah, I got nothing.
I believe so.
Okay, well then, you guys know the routine. Twitter, Basically Sports, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and all the other places you can find fine podcasting. With that, we will see you later this week with the big interview.
Latest.
Goodbye. Later.